So how is everybody? How many people are online?
Now 13 people.
Okay, let's start with the questions.
So anyone have questions, you can raise hand and unmute yourself and ask the questions to the Dajan directly.
Ignacio?
Ignacio, okay, yeah.
Good morning, good afternoon, Ajahn. I've been practicing following your recommendation for, let's say, 3-4 months. So I'm able to meditate, about 3 hours, 4 hours sometimes during the day. On weekdays and on weekends, sometimes I'm able to do 6-7 hours, which I think is at first. Sometimes I start very early in the morning. I try to start at 4 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes I'm not able to sleep. I only sleep maybe 5 hours, 6 hours because of maybe working late. So my question is it more important to maintain the discipline and waking up at a specific hour or doing a number of hours of meditation or to try to get some rest, because as you have said, when I don't get enough rest, my samadhi, I struggle with reaching any level of samadhi, and the kleshas are really, they have much more control. But I understand that it could be an opportunity for me to work on my on stopping those kleshas, but wanted to ask you, what recommendation you can give for those days that I don't get enough rest.
How many hours do you sleep?
So normally I sleep 7 hours. The days where I struggle, these days that I sleep 5 to 6 hours.
5 or 6 hours is more than enough. I mean, that depends. What kind of work are you doing?
I work similar to what you used to do. I work with computer work and a lot of thinking.
A lot of thinking, yeah. Yeah, 6 hours, 6 hours should be really enough. Yeah? And when you do computer work, it is really important, that you shut down your mind engine, yeah. Don't think about, what is going on tomorrow, because that is bringing us, this restlessness. Anyway, if you meditate this much, you should get enough rest, yeah, so you don't need to sleep so much. When I meditated about 3 or 4 hours a day, I needed not more than 6 hours of sleep. So that is perfectly fine. So you might have to overcome, yeah? You might have to overcome the sloth and torpor that comes with sleeping less. Sometimes when we practice and we cut down on hours, so when we cut down from 6 hours to 4 hours, for a week or 2 weeks, we feel tired. But once we overcome this tiredness and fill it up with our meditation, it's fine. It's perfectly fine. But while you're working, 6 hours, 5 to 6 hours, that is perfect, yeah.
Thank you.
Where are you from?
I am from Dominican Republic, but I live in Texas.
Dominican Republic. Live in Texas.
Yes.
How is the weather at the moment there? Hot?
It's mild, it's not hot yet.
Oh, my good. Okay, yeah, so continue, yeah. And
thank you.
The moment you feel really, after 2 or 3 hours of meditation, you really feel calm, do some investigation. Yeah. And especially, what I suggest to everybody who's still working, do the daily reflection. Yeah. I know it's difficult, huh?
It's very difficult. The daily reflection is.
Yes, but it is very helpful, especially, you know, when we work and we have contact with lots of people and lots of unsatisfactory, you know, communication starts, yeah. Then it is really helpful, you know, to do the daily reflection. Okay?
Should the daily reflection have a minimum time?
No.
You know, I do.
Just, what is important about the daily reflection is, you start in the morning with what kind of dreams or what kind of thoughts did you wake up, yeah? What did you do then, you know? Look at the feelings, look at the thoughts, and look at the memory, yeah? And look at your action, yeah? And don't judge it, yeah? If you don't remember, just skip to the next. Yeah? In the beginning, it might take an hour, you know, to go through the day, yeah? But when you do that daily, you know, after a while, I mean, it takes maybe 10 minutes, yeah? Then, because then you see it rolling down like a film, yeah? And if you don't judge, you know, I mean, you just see your effects of your own action, yeah? Of your speech and of what you're doing, yeah? And then the heart sees it, you know, and it's not interested if it is unwholesome. So that is really worthwhile. Yeah? It's the first part of investigation. Yeah? If you have some time on the weekend, you know, just reflect about birth, yeah, old age, you know, sickness and death. Yeah? Okay?
Thank you, Ajahn.
Yes, Michi Emily was looking, you know, how is your daily reflection?
Daily.
Daily struggling. Michi Sunanda, the same, yeah. Michi Windy, huh? Ah, I forgot. Okay, go ahead. He's the one from Ukraine, huh?
Yes. Exactly, yes. I wanted to ask something following up from our last discussion. You've spoken about monks who would, you know, go into the path of a tiger to kind of, instead of waiting for the kleshas to come to them, they go and hunt for the kleshas and try to bring the fear up.
Yeah.
And I practiced that to a very large extent because of my experiences. And it became very extreme, but I would contemplate death with every bite of my food.
Mm.
And it became so strong that I actually developed a fear of eating food. Because I was contemplating if I'm about to choke. And obviously that caused a lot of troubles, and I kind of feel like the kleshas might have lured me into a trap and kind of turned the Dhamma against me, you know? Like, oh, this is good practice, this is really good, you know? But then it's kind of like they taunted me into fighting the heavyweight champion of the kleshas, and I'm not ready to fight him.
I think this is correct. You're not prepared to fight the heavyweight champion.
Yes. Okay. And that was actually, I investigated what you told me last time, and I found that, you know, yes, I was scared of death, and there were regrets of things done and not done, but it was a very strange, I actually enjoyed the experience a little bit, to be honest, of the explosions and the excitement. There was a part of me that found it not so much I feel alive, but like I got to see the heavyweight champion. And I know who I have to beat to win the game.
Mm.
But my pride wants to go and fight him now. Mm. And I need to become humble enough to say, you know, maybe... Do I need to, if the fear of death comes, should I say, you know what, you can beat me, you know, I'm not ready for you, and should I instead ignore him completely and not get trapped and instead just focus on aversion and greed and, you know, lessen my ambition?
Yeah, I mean, less on your ambition. What you're trying to do is the mistake most of the Westerners are doing. You know, they want to have action, yeah?
Yeah.
And we don't want to have action, yeah? So first we want to develop the basis, yeah? Like, Like when you were a little kid, yeah? When there was something, you know, you went out, you know, you had a fight with some older guys, you know, you run back home, you know, and your mother or your father said, oh, okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. So you need your spaces, yeah? Where you can run home, yeah? And feel okay, you feel safe, yeah? And then once you have this feeling of safe, then you can go out again, yeah? Fight a little bit, yeah, and if it is too much, just raise the white flag, said, okay, okay, that's enough, you beat me, yeah. The important thing is that you know that you have beaten, yeah, but you also know at the same time, the next time I try a little bit longer, yeah. Don't go all in at the same time, because that's how you break, yeah. That's how your resolve can break, and that's how... We are waiting for the thunder. That's how your resolve can break, you know, and also you're completely, some people, you know, completely give up. Because, you know, I mean, something else develops. So don't do that, yeah? Yeah? Just raise the white flag, say, okay, that's enough for today, you know, tomorrow I'll do a little bit more, yeah? Mm-hmm. And every time you evaluate the experience that you made. So it is much more important to evaluate what actually happened, yeah? I mean, if there's excitement, you can be sure that is wrong. Yeah? Because this excitement comes from our wish, you know, to fight something, yeah? No. The fight goes on very quietly inside, yeah? Not giving in is the fight, yeah? Not giving in to the fear is the fight, yeah? So there's actually no excitement coming up, yeah? So when there's some excitement coming up in your practice, yeah, sometimes, you know, when you're in samadhi, you know, but it's not excitement, you know, it's just happiness or, you know, or tears running down, yeah. So, I mean, if this excitement comes up, stop it, yeah.
So that's an interesting distinction. So, you know, when you enter in samadhi and the rapture starts to cover your body and you feel...
That is okay.
Right, that's...
That's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you think you're fighting, now I'm fighting, you know, this big giant, you know, and this kind of excitement, then it's wrong.
Ah, because that's I try to use that imagination of fighting as a way to...
Yeah, yeah.
Framework to fight, but I'm just giving into the kilesas when I do that.
Yeah. That's the kilesas fighting the kilesas, you know, it never works out.
But isn't the Dhamma just good kalesas? You're using the kalesas against themselves?
Yes, but the Dhamma is always, you know, observing what is happening, not giving in to the reign of the kalesa.
Okay, there's a lot of detail there that I need to investigate.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Maybe then we can do the... questions submitted first?
Yeah, sure.
I will share my screen because the questions are pretty long. Yeah, I read it from there.
Try to compress it a little bit.
Okay. So, first question.
Oh. Yes, that is very nice, but I don't have my glasses.
I can help if you don't.
Okay.
Okay. I'll just read it.
Yeah.
Great misfortunes or sufferings required in order to persuade the citta to turn inward. For instance, in the case of Abhiranch, his youth was devoted to pleasure and enjoyment. After recovering from a terrible grief, Raj became in 1663 the reformer of the Order of the Trappist, which at that time had departed entirely from the strictness of its rules. He had once entered this order and through him it was brought back to that terrible degree of renunciation in which it continues to exist at La even at the present time.
What is he refer? What kind of monk is he referring to?
Sounds like Huh? Sounds like a Christian order.
Is he a Christian monk? Yeah.
The example he gave is from Christian monks.
That's very difficult. You know, most of the Christian monks you cannot compare to a Buddhist monk. So it is difficult. I mean, he has to ask the question, you know, online. I mean, ask me the question, then I can ask some kind of questions to understand what he's trying to get at. But from this readout, it is very difficult for me to answer. I mean, because, you know, Christian monks are not practicing like us. Some of the Christian monks, I don't say all of them, some of them were really good, yeah? But some of them, you know, just try to restrain, and don't develop any wisdom in this restrainment, yeah? And so they break, and then they get loose, you know, and then they lose themselves, yeah? That's all what I can say, yeah? I'm not too familiar, especially not with this monk, yeah?
And I think the question is, are great misfortunes or sufferings required in order to persuade the citta to turn inward?
You don't have to persuade the citta to turn inward. Huh? I mean, it does it automatically. So sometimes, you know, sometimes when we have misfortune, misfortune, you know, a great misfortune. There are two ways, you know, that the citta handles. Either it denies it, you know, and goes the worldly way, or it turns inward, yeah? I mean, but that depends on the characteristic of the person. You cannot say it always happens. Maybe you find some more questions in this piece? I mean, next time, you know, please come, you know, tell him to come online, yeah? So he can ask, you know, what he really wants to know, yeah?
Next question. Do you think psychedelics such as LSD and psilocybin give people a preview of nirvana and maybe increase their motivation to practice?
It normally decreases their motivation of practice because it's much easier to to throw a trip, yeah, than, you know, to sit and meditate. LSD can, yeah, but it can, you know, that depends on your mood, yeah. I'm not familiar with these drugs, you know, I haven't taken these drugs. And I really don't care about these drugs. Do it the way of the Lord Buddha, you know, this is the safe way. No? I mean, some people, yes, want to see, you know, what is Nibbana like, and so they take an LSD trip, you know, and instead of going to Nibbana, they go to hell. Yeah, visit hell for a while. And, you know, they come out, you know, completely shattered, yeah? So, I mean, it is not. I would not advise it, yeah. Leave the drugs aside, you know, and use samadhi, you know, to get down to the citta, yeah. Keep the citta calm. And from this point on, you know, explore what is in the citta. Yeah. I know it is more difficult, you know, people like to find the easy way out, but there is no easy way out. And sometimes, you know, Lumpucha, you know, I mean, at the time, you know, the Western disciple came to Lumpucha. Most of them were on drugs, yeah. I don't know what kind of drugs, you know. And he told them, you know, I mean, you can see certain things, yeah, when you take these drugs, yeah, that you normally don't see. But, you know, people who have taken the drugs, it takes seven times more, or it takes seven times longer, you know, to go there through your continuous practice, yeah, and to reach the same state. And when you reach the same state, you understand what is happening. When you just take drugs, you don't understand what is happening. So, and I saw it with a few people, you know, who were on drugs, you know. I mean, it is very difficult for them, you know, to practice sila, samadhi, and panya. Okay, now a nice storm is coming up, yeah. I hope it doesn't rain, yeah. When it rains, you know, we have to postpone the meeting, yeah?
Yes, exactly. And let's go to the next question. How to come out of restlessness and fear?
By focusing the mind on Buddha or on the breath coming in and breath coming out. Yeah? And whenever the mind wants to go out, you bring it back. That's how you come out of restlessness. Restlessness can be very difficult, because restlessness is a sign that the mind is all over the place now. And the only thing what you can do is, when the mind is all over the place, is just say putto, or putto, or putto. Yeah? Just bring it back slowly until the mind slowly comes down and gets concentrated. Or when you do the breath meditation, then just go back to the tip of the nose, yeah, and focus there. And then the mind goes out, and then bring it back, and then bring it back, and then bring it back. And over the time it gets calmer, and it becomes, the restlessness becomes less and less and less. That's the only way. Okay?
So it's the same for fear as well. I think this, the patto is...
Fear is different. Fear is one, you know, it is one thing, yeah? But the practice is also, yeah? The practice is also there. With restlessness, when restlessness comes up, you do it slowly, putto. And then focus again, putto. And then focus again, putto. Until the mind slowly draws in. When fear comes up, you do it fast, putto, 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 until there is no more thought, yeah? When there is no more thought, then you stop for a moment, yeah? And see what kind of thoughts or what kind of memories bring up this fear. When this fear comes up again, you do the same thing, putto, 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 yeah? Until the fear disappears, and then you let go. You want to see, you want to understand what kind of thoughts, what kind of memories are leading to this fear, yeah? And then once you know this, yeah, then you can investigate what am I afraid of, yeah? Because when I'm born, I sooner or later have to die, yeah? Am I afraid of the pain of death, yeah? Then let's investigate the pain. Through sitting for long hours, yeah? Let's see, you know, what is pain, yeah? Okay? So, with this feeling, it's the same thing, you know, with, I mean, be it fear, or be it lust, or be it hatred. You have to be really focused, yeah? Because these things, fear, greed, hatred, yeah, and lust, yeah, are coming on very strong. And they are coming on because the fire is burning very hot. So you have to pull out all the wood from the fire until the fire extinguishes. And the wood for the fire are thoughts and memories. Yeah? So you have to be very quick. Yeah. So you repeat the Buddha, or I mean, put the breath. You know, focus on the breath. Very, very, very concentrated. Yeah. And then you let, once the fear is gone, then you let go, or once the lust is gone, you let go and see what kind of thoughts, what kind of memories, you know, are coming up that produce it. Because it will come up again. Okay, understood?
Yes, thank you, Daniel. The next question is from Rova. So it's actually a very detailed question about his personal experience. So we will skip this, I think, should maybe ask Daniel to say.
Roma?
Rova from India.
Oh, yeah. India.
Yeah, from India. Yeah, he wrote a very long essay about his practice. So, yeah, I think we'll just skip that. Next question. Ajahn did in a talk mention the importance that Longta Mahabua lays on right temperament. Can Ajahn explain more in detail with gratitude and respect?
Temperament?
Yeah, one right temperament.
I never heard looked about talking about temperament.
Yeah, okay.
And I mean, if I translate, I mean, I read all the books in English. I mean, there's never the mention of temperament in any of these books. Huh? So I mean, it is difficult for me to understand what he means with temperament. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I mean, next time he has to specify the questions a little bit more. Yeah? Or give me the talk, you know, the number of the talk where it was, where Lukta said it, yeah, and then I can understand it. Yeah? Sorry, but...
Okay. Yeah. Next question. This one is a bit long, so Hello, Ajahn. Is it just good karma that has led me to Dhamma this life? As I'm confused, how can an animal become a human, woke up to a human rebirth, if the animal cannot consciously make good karma?
What exactly is this question? I mean, yes, it is good karma if you're born as a human being, yeah? And it is bad karma, you know, if you're born as an animal or go to hell or are born as a ghost or a hungry ghost, yeah? But sooner or later, you know, your karma, you know, that leads you down to the hell or down to the ghost realm or to the animal realm, you know, will be used up, yeah? And then you come back as a human being. With the animal realm, it is very difficult, yeah? Because as an animal, it depends on if you're an animal that doesn't live on other creatures, yeah? I mean, then it is the way up. If you're an animal that lives on other creatures or kills other creatures or tortures, you know, I mean, yeah? Hunts other creatures, huh? Then you will go down the spiral, yeah? And, I mean, if it is good karma, you know, of course it is good karma when you're led to the Dhamma. Yeah? But then it is your choice, you know, I mean, think it's my good karma. Then you have to perpetuate this good karma, you know, by going in and by going forward on the path, you know, of the Dhamma. Hmm? Sorry, these questions are a little bit abstract, you know, I mean, it's very difficult for me to...
Yeah, this part one, part two. Does it mean that now I have found the Dhamma? Now he has found the Dhamma. Does that mean that no matter how much effort, I guess, he puts in this life, there's a chance that he will lose the knowledge of the Dhamma the next life when he is born as an animal or a human with no chance in Dhamma?
If he keeps with the five precepts, I mean, he's certainly not born as an animal. I mean, if he doesn't harm any animals, yeah, he will not be born. People don't seem to understand what is karma. Yeah? If I kill animals, you know, if I torture animals, huh, then sooner or later, if I do that enough, I will become an animal. But if he has found the Dhamma, and if he keeps the five precepts, he doesn't have to worry about it. If he practices along the path, you know, and constantly reminds himself, yeah, even if I die before I can end this path, you know, I want to practice it in the next life. And if he works for that, I mean, there is a good chance, you know, that in the next life, you know, he becomes a human being, you know, or he goes up the deva realm and then becomes a human being, and then can continue his pursuit of the Dhamma. Yeah? But if he doesn't make this mental, you know, this mental image, you know, this is the Dhamma, this is a precious thing that I have found now, yeah, and I don't want to let it go, yeah. If he doesn't, you know, if he sometimes, yeah, okay, that's fine, and then he looks at the world and sees, oh, there's much better things in the world, you know, and then he gets lost, yeah. And then that can also happen for a whole lifetime, yeah, that he gets lost, you know, in the sensual forms of the world, yeah. So he has to keep the Dhamma, be precious, you know, something as precious, you know, and constantly remind him, yeah, I'm on the way to Dhamma, you know, and I don't want to lose it, yeah.
Then, following that, just in summary, does it mean that he has to repay for every debt karma he has done in the past? If that's the case, then how does one ever get enlightenment?
No, he doesn't have to repay for everything, you know, he has done in his previous life, yeah. But for most of the things, and especially for the things, you know, I mean, that are, yeah, that are really grave, yeah, he will have to repay, yeah. But if he is on the path of Dhamma, then he will repay it in a different way than he is in the path in the world, yeah. So sometimes, you know, if he's on the path of Dhamma, he doesn't have to go down to hell, but, you know, I mean, he can, yeah, experience really, really big misfortune, you know, when he becomes a human being. It really depends, and I cannot say, you know, because I don't, first of all, I don't know this person, and I normally don't know the karma of these persons, so I mean, it is difficult for me to say. I mean, he should make a wish that next life he meets the Lord Buddha, you know, and then he can ask the Lord Buddha about his karma. Because the Lord Buddha is certainly one person, you know, who can tell him about, you know, what is in store for him. But for me, you know, I have a certain inkling about, you know, how karma affects, you know, our practice or how karma affects our life and things. But this is not really not extensive, yeah. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. The next one is on the fifth precept on alcohol.
Yeah.
So, if one dies an alcoholic but has acted good in all other ways, for example, has not killed or harmed another person or stolen anything, does that mean that the person will still go to hell?
Yes.
Yeah. So if one gets sober, so after being an alcoholic, he gets sober and keeps the precepts for the rest of their life. What happened to all those years spent drunk and not sober?
People don't understand. If you're drunk, you say things and do things that you don't remember. Huh? And these are, most of the time, you know, are against the precepts. Yeah? So he has to experience not only the precepts of not drinking alcohol or taking drugs, yeah, but he also has to experience the things that he did while he was drunk. Yeah? if he is going from now on, yeah, I don't know how long he has been an alcoholic, if he goes on for now, from now on, you know, to the end of his life, you know, keeping the five precepts and practicing and practicing and practicing, I mean, he might go to hell or he might not go to hell, yeah? I mean, it is very difficult to say. But if he can't let go of the alcohol, you know, I mean, and think in the last moment of his death, oh, it would be so nice, you know? Huh? Oh, there's so much pain, you know, why don't I drink something, yeah? You know, then he certainly goes to hell. I mean, the last moments of one's life, you know, before one dies, you know, these thoughts and memories that come up, you know, are very important, you know, and send us on the way, you know, they can send us on the way to heaven, they can send us back in the human realm, or they can send us to any kind of lower realms, yeah? It's very difficult to say, yeah? Just, you know, just for people who have broken the precepts, you know, Even there were grave precepts, yeah. If you're steady now, I mean, it can only become better, yeah. That is the most important thing. Yeah? If you are keeping the precepts from now on, don't look back, yeah. Forgive yourself, forgive others, yeah, yeah. And ask others for forgiveness for whatever you've done unto them, yeah. And that's it, you know. And then go your path of practice, yeah. Use samadhi and develop some wisdom. And also the same thing holds true, you know, I mean, fix yourself on the right path. Yeah? And once this is gone, you know, whatever happens, you know, it is much easier to bear. Yeah? Oh, these are all so theoretical questions, yeah? Difficult to answer.
There's one last one. Does being drunk itself bring bad karma, or even if they just harmlessly sit around alone, not doing anything?
What was the question?
While they're drunk, if they just sit at home and do nothing, is it still bad karma?
I mean, it is bad karma, but it isn't, yeah. I mean, why does he drink, yeah? Yeah? I mean, because he has a lot of dukkha. If he would, instead of drinking, you know, he would investigate his dukkha, I mean, he would gain some wisdom. It is not as bad, and he might not have to go to hell, yeah? But as I said, you know, these are rhetorical questions. I cannot answer them, you know, 100%, yeah? There might be a chance that he doesn't have to go to hell, and there might be a chance that he has to go to hell. Has to drink some liquid iron, you know, to know, you know, that alcohol is not good. Okay, so.
Last question. I'll just read it out. Is that why we practice Shosin Ken? And we are practicing, we don't make good on that karma. That as there's no becoming when we haven't made any karma by just doing the practice.
I mean, he completely lost me.
Basically, he's asking, while practicing meditation, he thinks we're not making any karma. Is that what
of course.
Practice?
No. Whatever you do, you make karma. Be it good karma or bad karma. And practicing is making good karma. Yeah? I don't know what I have to say. Yeah? We don't make bad karma, you know, if we practice this, we keep our mind steady on the Buddha or do the investigation, then we make good karma. Yeah? Actually, practice is the best good karma that you can do. Yeah? There is not, the only person who doesn't do any karma is an arahant. Yeah? Everybody else does karma, yeah? Be it good karma or bad karma. Yeah? Because we have intentions, yeah? When we have intentions, we do karma. Yeah? If we have good intentions, we do good karma. If we have bad intentions, yeah? Or unwholesome intentions, then we do bad karma. Isn't that clear? I don't know. Okay, go on.
Yeah. These are the questions that
were
submitted online. Anyone else has questions they want to ask directly? Yeah, me, yourself.
I
think there's a question on the chat. Let me read. There's a question on the Zoom chat, so I'll just read it up. Dear Tan Ajahn, please guide me how to contemplate death in my daily practice. Sadhu and thank you very much.
How to contemplate death?
In my daily practice.
Think about birth, huh? Think about old age, think about sickness, and see, you know, and think about death. I mean, you have seen people dying, yeah? I mean, if you haven't seen people dying, go to a funeral, go to the cremation site, you know, where you see people are burned up, huh? And then contemplate it for yourself, yeah? What is it, you know, what is it like, you know, I mean, to die, yeah? Of course it is much better, you know, if you have some samadhi, you know, and then tell the citta, show me one of my death, yeah? And then the citta will show you your death, you know, and then you can investigate it more. People are normally afraid of death, yeah? So, I mean, think about, yeah, I'm going to die, you know? Or think about it, I have a big sickness, yeah? I have cancer, yeah? I have one more month to live, yeah? And then go through this month, yeah? And then go through the pain, you know, and go to the end, you know, and until there's no more, until there's no more breath, yeah? Until the breath stops, yeah? And then look, you know, what is happening after the breath stops, yeah? Then go on, you know, in the decay of the body, yeah? What happens after the breath stops, yeah? And then what happens after this, and what happens after that, yeah? Until you've gone through the decomposition of the body. Or think about, you know, I mean, you go back home. You want to try change it. You are alone in your home, yeah? You close it, you know. And one of the light is not working, you take a ladder, you know, I mean, you change the light bulb, you fall from the ladder and you cannot move, yeah? And nobody is around, you know, nobody is helping you, you know. I mean, you've broken your ribs, you know, and you just die of thirst, or you just die of hunger, yeah. First of death, of thirst. Yeah? I mean, think about these possibilities. Yeah? Or think about, you know, somebody, yeah, somebody comes up, you know, and beats you up, you know, and you beat you up to a pulp, you know, and then what happens, you know, and let you lie in the street and nobody helps you, yeah? Until you die. Yeah? Think about these things, yeah? and investigate, what are you afraid of? Are you afraid of the pain of death? Yeah? Or are you afraid of death itself because you don't know, yeah, what is coming after it? These are just a few examples. You know, I mean, be creative about this. Vijayananda, bring it back to his kutia. Yeah? It's amusing. I mean, that's all what I can say. Be creative, you know. I mean, imagine all sorts of death, yeah?
Yeah, and there's a follow-up question in the chat. So, is death contemplation done using oneself as the object, or can it be using another person dear to you, for example, your father?
Of course you can use any kind of person. It's the same with asubha practice, you can use any kind of person to decomposition him, you know, or to taking him apart, yeah, or opening him up, yeah. That's the same thing. But also there's a certain fear about your own death, yeah. But most of the time, you know, I mean, especially if you see somebody self-suffering, yeah, then we also suffer, yeah? Because we always, you know, we put it back on ourselves. We always see this image of the person suffering or the person close to die, and we get the fear, you know, of this person, yeah. So I mean, it is okay, you know, to see somebody else, especially some loved ones, you know, dying, you know, or whatever. As I said, be creative and see what kind of fears they are coming up. Yeah? I mean, we are Buddhists, we know, you know, I mean, if you change, just like the people in the world, you know, if your old car, you know, doesn't work and you have to put it to the scrapyard, then go and look for another car, yeah? I mean, you are not dying, the citta is not dying, the citta is the eternal, yeah? Tourist that goes from one place to the other, from one realm of existence to the next realm of existence. And it turns around, yeah? And unless we put a stop to it, yeah, and find a way out, yeah? And that's why we are practicing. Yeah? We are not practicing to make us happy for a moment, yeah? We are practicing to find a way out of dukkha. Because dukkha is the first thing, that's why we start practicing, yeah? I've seen a lot of people, you know, I mean, when they have a lot of dukkha, they practice very hard, you know, and then suddenly they don't have so much dukkha, and then they stop practicing, yeah? Until, you know, a few years later, they drop into a lot of dukkha, and then they start practicing again. No? Practicing is not, you know, is not, what is it, vittilabai? It is not a means, you know, to get rid of the dukkha, yeah? Not rid, yeah. In Thai they have two nice words, you know, I don't know how to express it in English, yeah? I mean, to overcome, you know, it's always the same, yeah? To momentarily overcome dukkha, yeah? I mean, that's why that's what the motivation is to practice, yeah? But once the dukkha is gone, they are not interested in completely get rid of dukkha. Completely getting rid of dukkha is that why we do the practice of sila, samadhi and panya. Sila is the five precepts when we are in the monasteries, the eight precepts when we are monks, 227 precepts. When we are novices, the 10 precepts. Eh? When we are michis, you know, also the 8 precepts. Eh? And samadhi is the ability to concentrate on one point, yeah? Be it the Buddha or be it the breath, around the tip of the nose. Eh? And in investigation or panya, wisdom, you know, is developed through focusing on a thing and investigating, asking questions about it. Yeah? What is pain, for instance? Yeah? What is pain? Yeah? Or what is fear? Yeah? What is the reason why fear comes up? Yeah? What is the thought or what is the memory that leads to this fear? Yeah? Or what came before this memory? You know, maybe something else came up. Maybe, you know, what came before? Yeah? Until we find the stone that causes the avalanche. Yeah? I know in Singapore you don't have avalanches, you know, but whenever you go to Switzerland, you can see these avalanches, you know, rolling down the hills. Yeah? But there is a cause for this avalanche, and it is always a little stone. Yeah? And we have to find, you know, for any kind of emotion or for any kind, you know, feeling, yeah? We have to find, you know, what is the stone that caused this feeling. Yeah? Or memory coming up, or thought coming up. Understood?
Yes. Yeah, there's a question from Elizabeth. You want to have me answer?
Yes, good day, Ajahn. This is Elizabeth. I have a question about addiction.
Mm.
addiction, like getting oneself involved with gambling or being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Now, I know all these actually what we call inner mind. We talk so much in our Buddhist practice, we talk so much about watching the mind.
Yeah.
Watching the mind to perform good.
Yeah.
To do good deeds. Then again, these people, when you tell them about watching the mind, you know, when you are into the desire to want to stay there in the computer screen, in front of the computer screen for hours, you know, playing your games and then into betting, all this, to them, that's into their mind. Yeah. So my question is, how do we encourage them to draw themselves away from such activity? All right. Any words or quotes using the Buddhist language, I have tried, it will turn them away. It makes things worse. They will just tell me, I'm not along your faith. Don't give me all this crap. So it's really a struggle for me. I have no other words how to encourage them to put themselves away from all this unwholesome. You know? And their addiction can be so bad when they're into debts. They will tend to steal. Yeah? And that to me is really, I cannot take it. It's really bad karma to me, okay? And also upon themselves. It's really bad karma upon themselves. So I really wonder, how can they redeem all this bad karma they have done upon themselves?
They're in hell.
Yeah.
They have to go to hell. I'm sorry. You know, normally I cannot talk about, you know, when you refer to other people. I cannot talk about this, yeah? But the only thing that you can do, yeah? They say, don't talk about this Buddhist crap, yeah? Show them the dukkha. That what makes them, you know, give them a hint, you know, what makes them, you know, gambling or what makes them, you know, I mean, it's a dukkha that is in their heart, yeah? So if you have a means to show them the dukkha, don't tell them, you know, what's your mind, yeah? I mean, that is completely useless for these addictive people, yeah? Huh? Look at yourself, you know, I mean, look at yourself, how you are addicted, yeah? You're addicted to other things, yeah? You're maybe probably addicted to your smartphone, yeah? Huh? This is addiction, yeah? You cannot let go of, no, looking at the smartphone, there's a sound from your smartphone, you look at it, yeah? This is already addiction, yeah? Yeah? Huh? And then see, you know, why am I, you know, I mean, always, you know, always go from your own experience, yeah? Why am I taking this phone? Or why is it, you know? And then look at this, you know, look at this, this pain, you know, that is in our heart, yeah? I mean, that's why they do gambling, yeah? Or that's why they do, you know, do drugs, you know? And it becomes worse and worse. And there's heart, and you cannot convince them with words. You can only try, you know, to hint at that dukkha, yeah? At that dissatisfaction that they feel at that moment, yeah? Because that, Buddhism is something that you don't preach. Buddhism is something that, you know, people with a little bit of wisdom, you know, come to understand themselves, you know, and they have to be open for it, yeah? When they come and ask you questions, how can I overcome my, you know, I mean, my addiction is becoming worse and worse and worse, and then they come to you and say, how can I overcome my addiction? Then you can teach them.
Thank you, Ajahn. I'm waiting for that day for them to come forward to me with their question. Blessing, thank you, Ajahn.
So, actually, my question is regarding blessings by Christians. Because I am a Buddhist, but I have many friends who are Christians and Catholics. And due to my medical condition, many of them have been very kind to pray for me. And one of them even wanted to invite me to a healing session. So those who pray for me, I am very grateful. But for those who invited me to a healing session at the church, I am not quite sure. So actually, I wanted to know, what does a Buddhist position on this? Are they just open to any kind of blessing? Do they just attend any session? Or I'm not very clear on this, so maybe Ajahn can give some advice. Thank you.
As a Buddhist, we don't have concepts about what is a Buddhist and what is not a Buddhist. As a Buddhist, yeah, well, whatever is given to us or whatever is offered to us, I mean, if we don't know what the effects of it is, yeah, we can go there, so you can go to the healing session, yeah, and then after the healing session, you know, ask yourself, was it a good experience, was it a wholesome experience, or not, yeah? If it was a wholesome experience, okay, go ahead, yeah? But you have to do that every time, yeah? Sometimes, you know, the first time we don't see, you know, don't see the side effect. Just like you, when you take some medicine, yeah? I mean, medicine is good, you know, for a certain purpose, but it also has some side effect. When the side effects become stronger than the wholesome effect, then let it go, yeah? It has nothing to do with Buddhists, you know. I mean, if they are Christians or Muslims, you know, if they have a good way of how to deal with the sickness, you know, I mean, it's fine. Yeah, just go ahead, yeah. Just you. Actually, the only open religion, if it is a really Buddhist, he is open to anything. Yeah? But he will always contemplate, you know, what is the effect of what I'm doing, yeah? On my citta, on my soul, on my citta, yeah? On my heart, yeah? And if he sees it's a good effect, so, yeah? And do that also with food, you know? Huh? And we eat food because of our taste, we don't eat food for our body, yeah? If we start to eat food for the body, I mean, the body becomes healthy, yeah? We might not like the food that we eat, you know, but the body can deal with it, you know, and heal itself, yeah? A lot. You understand me?
Okay, good evening Ajahn, I'm from Penang, Malaysia. I just wanted to ask for Ajahn some guidance on how to skillfully handle a situation. Me and my friends, we go and offer dana at the monastery every week. So we usually carpool together. Carpool, that means three or four of us in one car.
Yeah.
But one of our friends, she's always late. It's a habitual tendency, she's always late.
Mm.
You know, and her lateness causes to, like, you know, we have to drive hurriedly up the winding road, you know, and we arrive at the monastery in the nick of time. Sometimes the sangha, the monk has to, like, wait a while for us to get ready to eat food, you know. So we have advised her many times, but she's not happy. Every time I talk to her, she won't be happy. It's like, to her, it's like, yeah, you girls should wait for me, you know, nothing wrong with me being late, you know. It's always like 15 minutes late, 20 minutes late, you know, that kind of thing. Is like, kind of irritating, and she's a good friend. Other than being habitually late, she's actually okay as a friend, you know. But she has this particular habit that we can't really,
yeah,
you know, I don't really know how do I skillfully handle this situation. I really don't know. I'm just frustrated.
You make up a time, yeah, and within 5 minutes, yeah, if she's not come, then you just leave.
Actually, one of the days last week, we texted her, you know, we still are leaving.
That is the most effective way. Yeah, the next time, you know, she might complain a lot, you know. Let her complain. It's her complaint, you know. Yeah, don't take it onto your heart, yeah. And the next time, you know, the next time she does it again, you do the same thing. Yeah, you wait 5 minutes, you know, and then you go. Yeah? You tell her, I don't want to rush, you know, and I don't want to have an accident when I go to the monastery. I want to do some good, yeah. I don't want to have some bad karma, you know, along the way, yeah. And that is the only way she will learn. Yeah? As long as you constantly wait for her, you know, I mean, she will always be late because she knows you're waiting for her. You understand that? Yeah? But if you stop, you know, waiting for her, yeah, then she might get her act together. Because it is not nice, you know, to let other people wait. Yeah? Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
That is skillful, yeah?
Anyone with any last questions?
Did some of you, you know, listen to my last talk? What was it? I was talking about being a robot, yeah? Being programmed, constantly programming ourselves when we come in this situation, when we go to work, we become this person. When we go back home to our family, we become this person. When we see our mother, yeah, we react like this. You know, when we see our father, we react like that, yeah? This is all programming, yeah? And For us, you know, for us to see this program, yeah, it's the first thing. We have to first see what is going on, yeah. Why am I behaving, you know, afterwards, yeah. Do the daily reflection, you know, and you see, you know, your behavior changes depending on the person that you meet, yeah. You're not always, you know, open, yeah. Because when you see your friend, you think already have all the image about your friend, how he was, you know. Even if it was 5 years ago, you know, you still see him as 5 years ago. Just like your mother and father sees you as your 15-year-old or 20-year-old, yeah? Or even 5-year-old child, yeah. They can't see you as you are, yeah. And that is our programming. So to remove this program, to see it, you know, and be open, yeah. And that is very difficult for us, yeah. Being open, what is going on, yeah? Instead of, you know, I'm going to see my mother, that's how I'm going to act, that's what I'm going to say, yeah? When my father asked me, I'm going to say that, or when my wife asked me, when my boss asked me, I'm going to do this, or this is all programming, yeah? This is being a robot, you know, yeah? A smart robot that programs itself, yeah? And it falls into his program. But that is not the open mind, it's not the open heart, yeah, that looks at a situation. Whenever I come into a new situation, I close my eyes, make buddha buddha or breath, yeah, and then open the eyes and what is going on? Yeah. Or ask yourself, what can I learn from this situation? Yeah. Then at least, you know, in this moment, yeah, in this very moment, you're not programmed, yeah. But if you have already ideas what to say, what to do, and how to act, you know, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not free, yeah, we are not free. Hmm? So practice, use the time wisely, you know, to practice as much as you can, yeah. Especially, you know, in these times, you know, I mean, as I said before, you know, it is important, yeah. It is important, you know, to put ourselves away and to disentangle as much as we can from the world, yeah, and put more emphasis on our practice, yeah. And the more we have, the more we can go into samadhi, the more we can do, see what is going on in our life with our daily reflection, yeah. I mean, the more we can change, yeah. And you will see this change always leads to some more wholesomeness in our life, to less dukkha, yeah. This is what I can advise you. Don't fall in your old patterns, yeah? Okay, Sani? Yeah? And the people from Singapore, you know, next month, you know, we'll have a little bit more time, you know, to ask questions, or?
Yeah, I'll send you the poster by tomorrow.
How many people will attend? Do you have any idea?
No idea yet. Let you know when we complete the registration.
All bureaucratic, all bureaucratic. At least this Zoom session is not bureaucratic. Anyone who wants to join, he doesn't have to register. He just can come on. Okay, so I mean, if you don't have any questions, yeah, then I wish you. A good meditation session. Practice. Yeah. Okay. Goodbye then. Yeah.
Okay. Let's hear a successful together. Bye.
So, and it's the same. It's the same for us, you know. I mean, use the time wisely. Yeah. I mean, we have hardly anything to do here. We have very little distraction. Yeah? Also, you try to keep calm. You know, when you go to the Panna, don't do so much talking. Yeah, eat yet? Yeah? It used to be, yeah, in Bantat, you know, when I was at the monastery. I mean, we came to the Panna place. You know, we took our coffee and we took, you know, this or that. You know, maybe a dish, you know, this and that. And then everybody went to another place. Yeah. And then he ate it, you know, then he washed it, and then he put it back, you know, he went back to his kuti, yeah? There was no interaction. If there was if you know, some of the monks, you know, started, you know, talking about it, Lungka Mahaboha came out of his kuti, you know, went straight, you know, and then all the monks, you know, saw him, you know, and then disappeared, yeah? Because they knew that they could they are not allowed or they are not supposed to do. Sometimes, you know, sometimes, you know, a Westerner came to Wat Prabhupada's, he saw me and he wanted to talk and talk and talk. Yeah? And I wanted to go back to my kuti, you know, and then I saw Lungta, you know, and then I just ran in the woods. I didn't want him to catch me, yeah. And this, he accepted, you know. He accepted if you knew that you do something wrong and you react on that, you know, and then you run away, then you knew, okay, you got your lesson, yeah. But if you were sitting there, okay, it doesn't matter, you know, I can talk, you know. I mean, then you got a really scolding, or he even kicked you out of the monastery for not listening to what he said. Yeah. keep the communication down, yeah. And also, you know, reflect about, you know, do the daily reflection. You see a lot of things, yeah. And don't judge it, don't judge, yeah. Just see what was going on. What did you say, huh? And then you, I mean, our memory is so good, you know. I mean, our citta remembers everything, yeah. I mean, he remembers, we can remember the reaction of the other person. If we are good, you know, we can remember the reaction or the face of the other person when we say this, yeah. So we can see if something is wholesome or not wholesome. Yeah? But it takes training, yeah? So train it every day, you know, and sooner or later you will become very proficient with that. Okay, understood? Yeah. Now it's hopefully raining heavily. I was so hot. I mean, so few times, you know, I mean, in these 28 years I'm here, you know, I mean, it was only, it's the second year that was so hot.